Dan to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but I'm here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Hey everyone, welcome back to Let's Talk Wyoming. Today, I have the rare chance to sit down with Governor Mark Gordon, a man who's been at the center of some of Wyoming's biggest debates, from defending coal and shaping our energy future to wrestling with tax policy, economic diversification, and now leading some of the most critical conversations about education and school choice. He's shown he's not afraid to take on Washington, but he's also not afraid to veto bills from his own party if he thinks they aren't right for Wyoming. I have been known to disagree with some of those vetoes, but I have always appreciated that he's willing to have the hard conversations. And I'm so honored to have him as my guest today. We're digging into politics, energy, nuclear innovation, education, and the larger fight over how much control belongs to Washington and how much should stay right here at home. Governor, thank you so much for being here.
Amy, thanks for having me on. You know, you mentioned the disagreements. What I've always appreciated about people in Wyoming is we can have those disagreements, and I'm not, you know, trying to spread peanut butter over them. They're meaningful and they make sense and they bring different points of view. And I've always appreciated the wisdom and the, the fairway kind of conservative views that you've had. I really appreciate them.
Thank you so much, Governor. It is wonderful to have you on here. So let's start right in. I wanted to talk a little bit about politics in Wyoming. So Wyoming has been, I think, in the ideological crossfire, fueled by a lot of out-of-state money in this last election. And I think what we're looking at, we're going to continue to see that happen in the next election cycle. I had one out-of-state political consultant characterize Wyoming to me as cheap, meaning you can convince voters to vote one way or another using very little money. How concerned are you by this and what it might mean for Wyoming's future?
Yeah, I am very concerned about it. When I started my political career, you could mount a pretty good campaign for Congress, which I ran for around $1 million. Any of the other offices, a lot less. I think in the race that had Foster Freeze and Harriet Hageman and, God, I can never remember his name because he did that wonderful ad.
Wasn't that wonderful, Governor, if you can't remember his name?
Galeotis.
Yes.
You know, I think all of us spent well over that, in the neighborhood of 6 million, 4 to 6 million. And that just seemed outrageous. And now you see that money is coming in and really infusing the races in really weird ways. For me, you know, I grew up here. I always knew that Congresswoman Hageman had grown up here. Her dad was in the legislature. My dad was in the party forever. You know, there's a lot of Wyoming politics has been family in the past or, you know, close friends. And, you know, there's no counties more than like Bighorn County or Weston County where I would have thought you had to have those roots. You had to have the person who said, well, I don't know about that guy, but I talked to somebody and he helped change their tire and, you know, he's a good guy. You know, those were the kind of connections. Or you knew somebody's, you know, sister or something like that. And in both those counties, you know, they're kind of out of the norm of normal conversations. The radio's a little spotty there. TV comes from South Dakota or Billings, you know. It just didn't seem to me that those would be counties that would go for somebody, nothing about Foster Freeze, good candidate, great guy, but he hadn't been here. Nobody really knew who he was. And yet he won both those counties. Harriet should have won that one. We should have won Weston. They're both our backyards. So I think it's changed. It's changed the way we do politics. It's changed the issues that we talk about. And to your point about being cheap, I guess that's true. I mean, I can remember reading way back when a book that was kind of You know, we could take over New Hampshire if we wanted to. We could just spend enough money. We could put enough people into New Hampshire and we could make it happen. They had a safety valve because, you know, every town in New Hampshire has three representatives in the House. So while you only have 12 senators or something like that, you had 400 legislators. So it didn't work there. But you fast forward to where it is in Wyoming, we were kind of sitting ducks.
Yeah, yeah. I think these groups, most of them build themselves as obviously being conservative. I would think that they might want to check themselves because coming into a state where you're not a member, you're not a citizen, and just buying your way into elections, that is really not a state's right or conservative view. But as you know, politics isn't a charity. And when out-of-state groups like, you know, this come in and they spend large amounts of money, like we saw with Young Americans for Liberty, they want something. Clearly they want something because it's not a charity. Do we know what their agenda is? And what do we think needs to happen to help educate voters about this outside money?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seemed to me early on that there were, let's talk about that word conservative for a while. I mean, everybody bandies it about. And I finally asked, you know, a consultant that I have a great deal of respect for. I said, you know, what is conservative anymore? And he said, well, it's who's loudest. And that was sort of frustrating to me. I do think there were efforts early on to say there's things we can do about tax structure that clearly we think we can be better about this. Art Laffer, I have a wonderful napkin he gave me and told me, you know, you're the best governor in the country. I'm sure he told that to everybody, but you know, he said, really, Wyoming gets this in a way. So there, you know, under Reagan, arguably before that, I think there were some real policy decisions that were meaningful for states themselves moving forward. But of late, I think it's about stacking up states so that you can go to other states and say, well, you know, Florida's doing that. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I hear we should do what Florida's done, or we should be doing what, you know, Texas has done, or we should be doing what Missouri's done, as if this one size fits all really, really makes sense here in Wyoming.
It does.
And that, you know, legalizing marijuana is one of those things that I think there's been an incredible effort. And, you know, for me, when I first got on the political stage, I was shocked that, you know, when I would go into a town hall or something, it would be 60, 70, 80, 90-year-olds who were saying, we've got to legalize marijuana. We've got to absolutely legalize marijuana. I get the medical piece of that. I do to a degree, but this was just straight up. I need to have something more I can do. And I, you know, my worry is that we lose Wyoming loses a little bit of its soul if we got buy into that too much.
Yeah, I would agree. And for the listeners, regular listeners of this podcast know, if you want to know what conservatism is, I go into detailed eggheadery explaining all the details around conservatism. And I would agree with you, most of what we're seeing in Republican politics right now is more populism than conservatism. So yeah, just that point. Obviously, one of the problems with a lot of this outside influence is how accurate they are about complaints about the state or what they think of the state. You brought this up in a recent edition of your on-brand e-newsletter addressing some serious inaccuracies coming from, and I get these texts all the time. So I know all about this gentleman, Bill Gilmeister, saying about Mr. Gilmeister in your newsletter, quote, that he, quote, saw fit to invade your text messages with uninformed and false information claiming Wyoming schools are failing to teach our kids to read and write, unquote. So I got that text, Governor. I think a lot of people got it. Obviously, it's coming from Mr. Gilmeister, who says he's from American Action Fund, but American Action Fund is actually an arm of, you guessed it, Young Americans for Liberty and Make Liberty Win, which we also saw in the election cycle sending out what many people call deceptive mailers. Is there anything that can be done about these kinds of deceptive practices, or is it just voters beware?
I think, I believe strongly in personal responsibility, and I think voters have that obligation to be informed, not just to buy whatever comes through their text messages or anything else. I would love to see us be able to clamp down on this to some degree. Some of that's going to have to be coming out of the legislature. Some of that's going to have to come out of the Secretary of State's office. A little unclear to me how committed the Secretary of State is to sort of clamping down on those types of mailers. There was some back and forth with some bad mailers during the last election. That sort of event was pretty uneventful In fact, I think we rolled back some of the protections for voters in that process. Yeah, but you know, it's really frustrating to me. Look, I have four kids, proudest punch of them. One has a fence contracting business here in Wyoming, and another one in Montana. One builds furniture. And really high-end furniture. One is a hydrologist and geologist who's one of the lead researchers on several water projects. And one, I don't know why, but she seems to love New York and she's involved in Broadway. They came out of our school system. Now, there are, I think, a lot of places that we can, inform and make our school systems better. In fact, that's what we've been working on from the ground up with people with a couple of our initiatives. And I have no problem with school choice. I think school choice is a critical element of all of this. But to just sort of launch these things is misinformation. It creates a set of circumstances that everybody has to react to. And I'll give you a really good example. And I think you were probably part of this when you were in the legislature. There was one of these national outfits that sent me a yellow piece of paper. That was a fundraising letter, but there was a yellow piece of paper that looked like it was written in first grade or maybe second grade. You know, I had the backwards E and some things like that. And the letter said, "Why can't learn about the Constitution? Wyoming does not allow me to learn about the Constitution in middle school." We have a law that says you have to teach that. I'm thinking someone like you probably put that in place. I mean, so people, you know, somebody gets that message and they're now thinking, oh my God, we've got a terrible school system. It's awful. And it's all fictitious. It's all built up. And I do worry a lot about what that's going to do to our politics.
Yeah. I do too. All right, let's pivot to the upcoming budget session, because obviously it might be summer, but next year is going to be here before we know it. So the Freedom Caucus, obviously, they have a national backer in Washington, D.C., and they were able to win a majority in the Wyoming House. How have you navigated working with them? And what do you think about what their main issues are going to be for this upcoming budget session?
Yeah, well, to answer your first question about how to work with them, I have two answers. One, I grew up on a ranch, and from an early age, my job was to get the work that I was told to get done. And if that was moving cows and I was all by myself, not always did the cows do exactly what you wanted them to. You'd have to kind of work with them to get them where you needed to go. And I bring that kind of attitude. Don't always get where I want to go, but that's okay. I think that's part of politics as we go forward. The second piece is, it really kind of related. My job is to work with them. And I feel very strongly, absolutely committed to our Constitution. They build the laws, supposed to execute them. And if there's a disagreement, that's for the judiciary to solve for us. And so I try my best to work with the legislature to do that. There's been some times I put some initiatives forward, but by and large, I'm pretty hands-off and see what they come up with. With the Freedom Caucus, I think they've decided maybe a year and a half ago that the way they're going to announce the way they're moving, what they're going to do, is they're going to try to figure out whatever the governor does, we're going to try to pick at it. We have a couple of our things that we're going to do, but we're going to make our stock and trade criticizing the governor. I don't know if that's a winning strategy. People in Wyoming want things done the right way. And I'm not clear just being anti. I mean, we saw that with Biden. We saw that same attitude of not that, and look what it did for the Democrats. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's a playbook. That's a card from the left's playbook. And grievance politics has a very short life, because most of us obviously get tired real quick of those negative emotions and want some hope for the future. Certainly every parent in the state, everybody who's looking at the next sunrise, cares about the future of Wyoming. So I would agree with you. So
And Amy, not to interrupt you, but to your point, Wyoming has got so much going for it. We are politics the way they should be. You know your legislator. Anyone can walk in and talk to the governor if they need to. They can talk to the Secretary of State. They can talk to their senator. or their congresswoman. That's the relation that makes Wyoming special, which is why we can do things better, faster, and more elegantly than anywhere else in the country.
Yeah.
And then you look at the economic opportunities, they're just huge.
Yep. Yeah. So the Freedom Caucus actually just came out with a statement, and I want to get your reaction if that's okay. They came out yesterday with a statement about the upcoming budget session, and they said that they, quote, want to, quote, return to pre-pandemic spending levels and a renewed commitment to fiscal responsibility, unquote. So now, as someone myself who served on appropriation, I will say, with this statement and so much of what I see from the Freedom Caucus, there's a lot of buzzwords, but there isn't really ever a plan of like, how are you going to do this? They're really, really short on details. So I'd love your thought on that statement about somehow returning to pre-pandemic budgeting levels.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I think a good question. There's a couple of ways to answer it. You know, first off, you'll probably remember, Amy, that when the pandemic hit, then Congress reacted with CARES funding. And my first statement was, okay, this money is coming to the states whether we want it or not, and it's going to be paid for by our great-grandchildren. We need to make sure that we do investments that are going to pay off for future generations, because this money isn't going to be here after the pandemic. You know, that was the same message we brought for the IIJA, all the other nutty stuff that came out of the Biden era. We were not putting that to ongoing spending. It was all going to be used for future investments, infrastructure. And we did that better than virtually any other state. I have no problem going back to, you know, pre-pandemic, quote unquote, pre-pandemic levels of spending, because that's where we were aiming anyway. This was a bump of revenues. Wyoming does this all the time. And half the people that talk about this, you know, we need to be fiscally conservative again, weren't here when we had crashes in mineral prices, weren't here when the state was really in hard times and couldn't balance the budget unless a Walmart heir died. You know, they weren't here for those things. So Wyoming knows this. In fact, we reduced our budget by a third because during COVID, we weren't getting that revenue. So we're practiced at being able to cut back. What happened, though, and this is a story I tell over and over again, simple thing, close the rest areas 5 miles away from any particular town. Give the town the opportunity to run it if they wanted to, but otherwise the state was going to save that money, millions of dollars. We're going to save that money. Boy, you thought I'd cut something hard, you know? I mean, it was, I can't tell you how many people screamed and yelled, and from the Freedom Caucus too. Why'd you close that? It's terrible. You know, one town said, well, you need to run it because we don't want those people coming in our town. We want them to go right on by. So I guess the point I'm making is that, number one, that bump in revenue, I think Wyoming had it right. We wanted it to go to long-term revenue. There was some of it that, quite frankly, went to kind of ameliorate the struggles. You know, I think of the oil and gas guys that were laid off, you know, trying to help them get through to the end of the year so they could stay employed. You know, there were some things like that, but by far and large, the vast amount was meant to go for long-term benefit. And I think what people don't understand is because we could use that money to set aside for future savings, we're in a much better position now to go forward. But the other point I guess I wanted to make, all the problems, and when you were in the legislature, you know these very well, all the problems we had at pre-pandemic levels, we still have. We're still going to have to deal with infrastructure. We're still going to have to deal with education. We're still going to have to deal with, you know, all of these issues that were front and center before the pandemic, and they're still here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I read that statement and thought, listen, the Edmonds household would love to see our purchasing power go up because prices are coming down. But I'm pretty sure you, Governor, nor the legislature, nor the Freedom Caucus are going to make prices come down. So we all are facing the same reality. And when the legislature meets, they're going to have to make choices, right? And if they want all these pre-pandemic levels, it's going to mean significant cuts. And I think those are cuts the Freedom Caucus needs to take ownership of by actually having a plan.
I mean, that's an excellent point. We have had inflation and everything is more expensive. So it means the services are going to be more difficult. Well, you know, it's hard for us to buy snowplows. It's hard for us to hire snowplow drivers. So these are all issues they're going to have to wrestle with.
Yeah, real world problems that they have to deal with. So I want to pivot real quick to ask you what your priorities are for the budget, if you care to share.
Well, I think there are a couple of things that we really need to, from a state standpoint, still be very much on top of. We've got to protect our water. We've absolutely got to protect our water, whether that's in the Colorado, whether that's on the Platte, whether that's on the Snake, whether that's in the Missouri drainage. You know, we've got to make sure that we have both the legal firepower and the sort of technical ability to be able to meet those things. We want to make sure that we deal with the education issue. That's still pounding away at us. You know, we've had a couple of very bad judgments. I don't know how seriously this legislative joint education committee appreciates the challenge they have to deal with. So they're going to have to be kind of thoughtful because we've also expanded education, rightly or wrongly. And I happen, as I said, I believe very strongly in school choice, but we've tried to walk our way carefully into allowing charters to come on board, but they've opened the doors on that in a way that will be compelling to the budget. There are a couple of other considerations there as well. You know, we don't want to grow government. In fact, I think we want to kind of figure out ways that we can reduce it even more. But there's also new challenges that we don't fully understand the dimensions of yet, that are coming from the big beautiful bill, where they're turning more, you know, disaster relief, those kinds of things, coming more back to the state. You know, how do we meet those challenges? How do we deal with them? I think when we look at the budget, I think we want to make sure that Wyoming is able to meet the needs of her citizens to the best of our ability without overspending. And in order to do that, one of the key elements, again, is to be able to protect the opportunity for our natural resources to be developed. And so we're gonna be working hard to make sure that the Attorney General's office is well funded. We're gonna look carefully at things we can do in the Department of Health to try to, you know, figure out ways that we can make that more efficient. But you've been there on the Joint Appropriations Committee. You know, it's one of our biggest agencies. So it's where those cuts are going to come from. You know, there's not a lot of waste, fraud, and abuse there that we can look to. There's some more work we can do there. So I guess as an overarching theme, I think we're going to try to make sure that Wyoming doesn't shoot itself in the foot, that we're able to protect our futures, through our ability to defend our natural resources and their opportunity to develop. We're going to make sure that we protect our water. And then I really want to make sure that we protect the ability for counties to meet the needs of their people. Strong believer in local government closest to the people. That's where the decisions ought to be made.
So let's pivot real quick to talk just a little bit about energy. I want to start with just generally energy and then talk a little bit about some exciting stuff in nuclear. So you, Governor, have been a fierce defender of Wyoming coal, particularly our low sulfur coal, and innovations like the Integrated Test Center. You said in an interview last year, quote, "The biggest challenge we have is with DC. There's a drumbeat of we've got to stop coal. People think that if we put coal miners out of work, we're just going to make the world a little bit better. They do not understand what a challenge that is. In Wyoming, we educate our kids off coal. We built our schools off coal lease bonus sales. We mine it better than anyone else. It is low sulfur," unquote. I'm interested in how Wyoming walks this line between fighting for coal while embracing technologies that remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. Given the political climate we have right now, your detractors say you're embracing climate change, but Republicans across the country are working with conservative free market solutions, not subsidies, to create a path for legacy industries that includes a carbon emission reduction agenda. What do you want to say to those detractors and to anyone out there concerned that Wyoming isn't fighting hard enough for coal?
Well, I would say, yeah, you have to look at our track record. You know, we've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 some odd, oh, between 30 and 40 some odd lawsuits that are about protecting coal. Personally, I've been to JP Morgan. I've been to Barclays to talk about how they need to get rid of the ESG requirements. I called up 60 Minutes and I said, you know, you need to come to Wyoming because you think about what was going on at that time. Everybody was concerned about climate. The whole administration was focused on trying to shut down fossil fuels. And our point was, look, if your agenda is closing down fossil fuels, well, that's what you're doing. But if your agenda is fixing the climate, you're not doing that. You're actually shooting yourself in the foot. Wyoming can do all of these things. And Amy, part of the reason for that, and I'll talk about the benefits in a second, but part of the reason for that is that we need to make sure that people broadly, both internationally and within the country, wherever they may be, understand that coal is absolutely essential to their futures and that we always improve technology over time. We always have. And having a diversified energy portfolio is absolutely essential to our quality of life, to our well-being, and to our economic future. So making sure that you quiet the criticisms about we can't burn coal because it's bad for the environment by pointing out that nobody does it better and we can do low sulfur. And yes, there is expense and we can talk about that in a second. But you had major utilities a decade ago who were focused on closing their coal plants. We provide 22 states with coal. We should be providing Japan, we should be providing Taiwan and other Pacific Rim countries with better quality coal than they can get either from Australia or from Malaysia and Indonesia. But the point is you need to make sure that people say, we're going to make these choices about what to build and the new generation capacity. Part of that's got to be coal. And that's what we did with Basin. We've got some other people that are talking about, let's build a new coal plant. And lo and behold, that atmosphere has changed a little bit, largely because of what we did with the ITC. And we weren't the only ones doing that. Now, North Dakota was too. Doug Burgum and I kind of ran this trap line forever about how important it was that we understand the technology to burn coal would improve and it would be part of our future. There's no more abundant or cheap source of energy than our coal. So this was the point we kept trying to make. And finally, it's come through. You've got Rocky Mountain that's not closing plants as quickly as they were thinking about it. We've got other utilities that are saying maybe it's time to build new coal because of what's happening. And, you know, generally in the energy market. So all of these things, I think, are auguring well. But you know as well as anybody, you can't build a project overnight anymore. So, you know, one administration, 4 years, we need to make sure that those decisions, which are decadal, need to, you know, we need to give the confidence to builders of these that they continue to build new coal plants and they don't convert them to natural gas. It's not a zero-sum game, but that they keep that capacity going. And practically today, one of the big issues is that you have bonding companies. So as a new coal mine wants to expand or grow or just establish, they have to go out and get bonds. At this point, that bond market is still wanting to make sure that there's some carbon issue that's related to that. And then lastly, what I'd say from an international market, what we heard from Japan and from Taiwan was, we love Wyoming coal. You all have done more on carbon capture than anyone else, and we can lower our trade deficit against the Trump tariffs by buying your energy. So we want to buy your coal. We want to buy your gas. We want to buy your oil. These are all excellent things for Wyoming. Our challenge now is how do we get it off the West Coast? And the West Coast doesn't. And if we can point out that, hey, you know what? We're actually benefiting you because if we burn our coal in Japan, it is going to have lower emissions, and those are the things that come to you.
Okay. Let's pivot, Governor. I want to talk a little bit about nuclear. So, you know, Wyoming, obviously, when people think about Wyoming energy, we think about coal, we think about oil, we think about those backbone industries that really have powered not just our state, but the entire country. Those are the industries that have built Wyoming. But there's a new energy story, I think, quietly starting to take shape, and one that has put Wyoming at the center of a new energy revolution. Right now, up in Casper and over in Gillette, they're stepping up into the spotlight as potential manufacturing hubs for these micro micro reactors, a small factory-built nuclear power unit that can change the way we think about reliable on-demand energy. You, Governor, have been a key player in this conversation. Now, listen, it doesn't come without baggage. There's lots of questions about waste, about safety. You've talked about diversifying. How significant is all of this for Wyoming's economy and energy portfolio?
I think it's incredibly significant. Just sort of going back in history, Wyoming used to produce a lot of uranium. We had Gas Hills, we had Shirley Basin, we had Converse County, we had, you know, I had folks that I grew up with that worked out east of KC towards the Pumpkin Buttes. We produced a lot of uranium, and that was because nuclear energy was coming on. Then you have Ronald Reagan, and you had the START Treaty, and we're going to end up processing some of the old silver warheads, and that kind of jiggered the market a little bit. And then lo and behold, we've lost the ability to compete. We're now building it back, thank God, under this administration, because we have some 90, we used to have 92, we have now 97 because they've repowered some of the old nuclear facilities. So that's a traditional source of revenue for the state of Wyoming, and it's good to see it back, not in the Soviet Union or in Russia. You know, that to me is key. But to your point, the thing that was most exciting to me about rekindling that market was the fact that we could do more than just ship our minerals out. We could actually start to build the reactors. We could build the manufacturing. We could have the jobs that we, you know, kind of re-engineered the way we're doing our education at our community college level and our university level to be able to equip the workforce with the tools they need to be relevant in a burgeoning new environment, plus manufacturing. And a lot of people talk about, well, I mean, we'll talk about waste in a second, I'm sure, but this is coming because renewables alone cannot power reliably. And the other sort of thing that I don't think people understand, wind power, you have to overbuild it by 30% to be able to have a reliable wind farm. So that means, you know, you've overbuilt, you've wasted money on 30% that just has to be there in reserve. Nuclear power can fill those things. This new generation, I say new generation, the TerraPower plant that's being built in Kemmerer is similar to some technology that's been churning away since the late 50s at the Idaho National Laboratory. It passively shuts down. The safety issues are vastly different. It's not a big, it's modular, so you can, you can kind of mass produce it, chain it together if you want more power. I think it's really going to be an enormous game changer. And already I've been helping with trying to make sure places like Connecticut that can't get gas from Oklahoma through New York because they've embargoed it. Connecticut's saying we would love one of these. Virginia's saying we'd love to have. So if we can build that manufacturing here, it's a huge component of our economy. Plus that technology and other things bring a lot here to Wyoming. There's another company I think you probably know about, Radiant, which is even smaller. And the use case, BWXT is another, Babcock and Wilcox, they've been building reactors ever since we've had a nuclear Navy. They're looking at bringing that manufacturing here to Wyoming. So that technology, that expertise, all of that's going to be fantastic. And the use case is incredible. If you're in a little Alaska remote village and you need to power your town, you have to bring kerosene all the way from wherever it is up there to power the generator. And if you can't get through, then the lights go dark. With one of these reactors, you would have decades of power before you have to repower it. And it would just churn away there and do great things.
Yep. So what about, I mean, obviously nuclear energy comes with that one big question, which is, and I'm seeing it on social media, I'm seeing some Wyoming citizens talking about it. What about long-term storage? Do you have concerns about the nuclear storage, even in the manufacturing for either the microreactors or obviously the large nuclear project over in Kemmerer? Do you have any issues?
Yeah. Well, I think both BWXT and Radiant are looking at building reactors here and then finding, I mean, there may be some applications here, but being able to ship them out to other places where they could be used before the meter or behind the meter, as they say in the utility business. Yeah, I think there are concerns with waste. We've dealt with those for decades. Aka Mountain in Nevada was, you know, all but completed and then and ready to go. You know, Harry Reid shut it down. It's my understanding that people are looking at that again. There are some other options that are there. I don't really think Wyoming wants to become a waste repository. We already have a couple of low-level radioactive waste sites in Wyoming that were brought about for medical waste, for some of these other things. And it's nice that we have those. But in terms of bringing cores back and storing them here and other things, that would obviously rest with the legislature and the people of Wyoming. But I'm not eager to sort of jump on the bandwagon and start waving my hand and saying, you know, this is what we need to do. Which is why I think that some of the reactor technologies we're talking about now actually can use old spent fuel to be able to make new fuel. So we can recycle that fuel, which I think is sort of the first element to reducing the waste problem. And then in the case of the TerraPower, it's like 70% efficient. So vastly much more efficient than what we have in current light water reactor technology or in some of the others that are out there.
So, Governor, we've got about 5 minutes left. I just want to ask you two more things. First of all, you have really offered an argument that DC has forgotten about its commitment to federalism, meaning that our commitment as a nation to this idea of shared power, that we're not a top-down, that the feds don't get to just tell us everything. You've spoke about this in interviews. I wanted to bring it up because I think it's just so important. Not only does every Wyoming governor have to be an energy peddler, but they also have to be very much a strong supporter of federalism because we need to fight for our right here. How do we remind people about that federalism, that they're not going to constantly run to DC looking for solutions?
Well, I think this administration, the current Trump administration, is trying to push a bunch of that back on the state. That's actually good for us, I think, because, you know, we'll have to step up to the challenge and it should be locally more pertinent to what we're doing. I think in reminding people about that, look, Wyoming's 580 some odd thousand people, which is sort of what's funny about that whole Freedom Caucus state. You know, it's not like you'd had any Republican votes for the Electoral College that are at risk. So, you know, big deal. But I think what we've got to do is to make sure people in Wyoming are able to talk to their neighbors and to others about how important it is that our government is formed from the states, not from the federal side. And so one of the things that I've been trying to do as governor is work with, and they're both sides of the aisle, but our neighbors to the south in New Mexico and Colorado and Utah and Idaho, North and South Dakota, Nebraska, to talk regionally about, pay attention to what's happening here with what we're able to accomplish. And oh, by the way, let states do their thing. Let states compete on their own merits. This erosion that has happened, and I think it's all part of the money that's there too, right? But this erosion is really pernicious for the state and for our country. And it's been both Republican and Democrat administrations that continually sort of tend to walk over the top of states. This is one of the things the people of America should really rise up about and say, no, you know, we are a federal republic. We are a republic. And we've got to assert our rights. One of the things that I've talked about recently is on NEPA. You know, it's done by the federal agencies and it's done poorly by the federal agencies. We have primacy, as you know, in some of these tasks. I've put it forward that if the feds don't get their NEPA done on time, give it to the states. Let the states do that analysis. And oh, by the way, because it's going to be challenged and there's going to be big legal fees, federal government, you back the state. You back the state. You cover those costs for the state. And I'm hoping that we can get something like that through Congress, because only when we're giving the states the responsibility to run their futures are we going to have the country that our forefathers wanted to have.
So, Governor, before we go, I just wanted to talk for 1 second about education. Obviously, it's something important to you. I know you're doing some exciting stuff. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, in Wyoming, you know, what we said is, let's go to the communities. Let's talk to the parents. Let's talk to the teachers. Let's talk to the kids and the industries and find out what's missing. You know, we found out that we had all these standards and assessments that it took 23 years to educate 23 years to fully educate by all those standards, et cetera, a student. This is what our teachers were having to struggle with. It was meaningless. And what we ended up with is this teach to the test routine that we know sucks. And it was important for us to kind of open up education. So there's incredible stuff going on in Wyoming with RIDE and schools that are opening up to be almost like charters and be able to act like charters. And then we're also offering opportunities for charters to happen. Of course, the voucher bill came through. What's been exciting to me is it's been recognized that Wyoming is doing things that no other state's been able to accomplish. And so I don't know exactly how this happened, but I've been put in as the chair of the Education Commission of the States, which is a forum to share those ideas. It's been around 60 years to share those ideas on education from K-12 all the way through post-secondary. And just to get us back to what is it we're trying to make sure? We're not building robots. What we're trying to do is we're trying to educate people so that they can do math, they can do English, they know civics, they understand history, they understand the import of that. They also can, you know, take advantage of the offerings that are there to get CTE and other things. But not every welder wants to only be a welder all their life. They may want to own a business down the road. So we need to equip them with that. So that's part of what we're doing. I'm very excited about it.
I'm excited to see where Wyoming's headed in the future. And congratulations and good luck on the new gig. That's exciting. That's going to do it for this episode of Let's Talk Wyoming. My thanks to Governor Mark Gordon for joining me and for answering questions on everything from outside political influence and to an education policy to nuclear energy. We covered a lot of ground. Wyoming sits at the crossroad of big energy shifts, big education debates, and yes, big money from outside groups hoping to capitalize on cheap to steer the conversation. The choices we make now are going to shape not just what kind of economy we have, but what kind of culture we live in into the future. I, for one, hope Wyoming remains independent and tough. If you liked the episode, share it. Governor Gordon, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Amy. Really appreciate it, too.